Good evening, everyone. While we're waiting for Robbie, I really hope he shows up tonight. I'll make a couple announcements. I'm not going to be here next week, so I wanted to tell you about the next 2 weeks. Next week is the last class for this module, and it's going to include our practice day, so it will run a little bit longer. We'll meet from 7 to 9 o'clock. There he is. And then immediately following, we're not going to have a break this time between modules. 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to begin the next module, which will be establishing a daily practice. And that will be led by Shankha Mitra. And for those of you who don't know Shankha, this will be the first Discovering Buddhism module he's taught in this cycle of Discovering Buddhism. But he is a longtime student of Lama Yeshe Rinpoche. He was at Vajrapani, is that right? Before he came to Kadampa, I don't know how many years ago. And he is a very devoted and knowledgeable student. So I think we'll learn a lot from him, just like we do from Robbie. That's it.
Testing. Okay. Okay, good evening, everyone. Let's see. We can begin by doing three prostrations. No requirement that you join in, but it's a good way to combat arrogance. Okay. Oh, namo manjushriye, namo sushriye, namo utayamashriye soha. Oh, namo manjushriye, namo sushriye, namo utayamashriye soha. Oh, namo manjushriye, namo sushriye, namo utamashriye soha. Okay. See, do we have anyone who's here for the first time tonight? Okay. We can start with our prayers in the Gold Prayer Book, page 34. We'll do pages 34 and 35 in English. Taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, we'll read together three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all this to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalaka Niryatayami. And we'll begin with a meditation, concentration meditation. I think most people are familiar with this by now. So begin by checking your posture, establishing a firm, rooted posture that will be non-distracting as the meditation proceeds. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean way back, but sit straight, your back a little straighter than you normally sit. And if you're on a cushion on the floor, your back also is straight, a little bit stretched out. Our head is maybe just a degree or two in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Our eyes are either slightly open or very lightly closed. Our lips are lightly closed. Our tongue is against the roof of our mouth. Our shoulders are down, relaxed, and back a little bit, so our chest is opened up. Upper arms are away from the sides of our body. And we can either place our hands on our knees or right hand on left with thumbs touching. And legs in a position that you find comfortable. If you're on the floor, you can do any version of crossing your legs all the way up to full lotus. If you're sitting on a chair, make sure your feet are flat, and it's fine to put a cushion under your feet if you need be. But the whole point of the posture is it's very grounded. And we've talked about this a little bit. This is not the subject of this class, but our energy channels are open. Everything is open and solid, but nothing's tight or closed up. So just scan your body from the top of your head going down, and if you find any sources of tension or discomfort, identify those now and address them so they don't become a distraction during the meditation. And to just help settle our mind, we'll take three deep breaths from the abdomen, the stomach expanding on the in-breath, so our diaphragm is pulled down, our stomach contracting on the exhalation, and the diaphragm moving up. And you do that through both nostrils, and this is the one time it's okay to breathe a little noisily. Otherwise, during the meditation, your breath should be fairly quiet. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin our meditation by setting our motivation. The prayers that we've already done were one way of doing that, but we'll think specifically about our motivation now for doing this meditation and engaging in the discussion that's to follow. Said that the most powerful motivation is what we call bodhicitta. It's based on an understanding of our own suffering, our own problems, and the similar sufferings that we see others having. And we have the wish to relieve that suffering. But we know we're just not ready for that yet. And we understand that the most beneficial thing we can do now is to develop our own mind, our qualities of compassion and wisdom, so that we become enlightened to benefit all living beings. And that's the bodhicitta aspiration, the wish to become enlightened to benefit all sentient beings. Not just for personal liberation, but for everyone. Our friends, strangers, and even those people we dislike. And that's not a way we usually think. You know, we usually think, okay, I'm going to do this so it benefits me and the people I like. It's not a normal way of thinking for most of us. But try and generate that aspiration effort fully, even if it takes effort, even if you have to grit your teeth and just grind a little bit out. And we can even imagine that our family of this life is standing behind us. Our friends, those people we are close to, are on each side of us. Our enemies are in front of us. And all the strangers in the world are in front of us. We can imagine that we're doing this meditation for the benefit of all those people. Having set our motivation, we can now begin the actual meditation, a very simple concentration meditation. We place our mind, our consciousness, our awareness on the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils, the physical sensation of the breath coming in, and going out. We're not going to count the breaths. We're not going to describe them to ourselves. We're not going to think about them. We're just going to directly experience them. Mind on the breath. No duality. It's as if they become one. Direct perception. And every time we notice that our mind has wandered off, we gently bring it back to the breath, over and over and over, as often as necessary. And as always, we end our meditation with a brief dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something positive, that our mind is slightly different than it was before we did this meditation. We've made some positive imprints on it, and we think may that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in a way that benefits all sentient beings. Yes, thank you. Okay, everybody have a copy? Great. This is the, we started this last week, and we'll pick up again. This is the death process meditation. This is the meditation that His Holiness the Dalai Lama does at least four times every day, because he considers it so important. And this is a description of what happens to the mind and body at the time of death, as told to us by the Buddha, who, when he became enlightened, his mind was able to see all his past lives, all his future lives. Enlightened mind is not limited in any sort of way. So he knew what going through the death process was like, and he was just describing that and saying this may be something that you find beneficial. So it is rehearsing the moment of our own death. It's something that we've been through countless times in the past, if we believe in rebirth. But most of us don't remember much or any of this process. But it said if we are prepared for the death process, if we go through it with a calm, stable mind, we can use the moment of death to make great spiritual strides, and we can actually actively influence our next rebirth. Rather than just being forced by our karma with no control, we can actually begin to choose our rebirths or have some influence on it, at least. But if we're not prepared for it, it can be a very frightening and chaotic process, and the opportunity to use it for our advantage and the advantage of others is completely lost. So what happens at the time of death, and this is describing what would happen if you had a very orderly quiet death. Imagine that you're lying on your bed and your life is gradually fading out of you. We talked last week about if you're in an automobile accident or something, you'll go through all these experiences, but they'll be very chaotic. It'll be very fast. It'll be even more difficult to maintain control of the process. So it's said that, having a peaceful death is a result of good karma, so that's something to aspire to. But the way this is described is a series of dissolutions. It's said that various factors or various aspects of the body dissolve into one another, and various levels of consciousness dissolve into each other. So what's happening is the body is losing its ability to function, and that's seen in the column called the external signs. Then there are also certain internal signs, things that appear to our mind, and then there's the factors that are dissolving, which are various gross consciousnesses that gradually dissolve one into the next, till we finally reach the very clear, the light consciousness of the clear light consciousness, which is the purest level of our consciousness. And then the process is reversed. The grosser consciousnesses reappear. The internal signs are in reverse order, and the external signs are reversed. So the body gains its functions back. So what happens is everything starts to dissolve. We're left with the clear light consciousness. And this is what enters into the intermediate state, or what's called the bardo. And the process in the bardo is reversed, and we are reborn in the bardo into what's called a subtle body. Okay, that body is in the bardo for a minimum of 7 days, and is then maybe reborn into either human realm, animal realm, or whatever, leaves the bardo and is reborn. If the karma is not ripe for it to be reborn, we go through the death process again in the bardo, go through it again, arises another subtle body that wanders in the bardo for another 7 days, and then may attach to another rebirth. If not, dies again, is reborn, another subtle body, up to a total of 49 days, according to the Buddha. I mean, I don't know. That's what he said. But the bardo can be a very frightening state. So again, this is a reason to practice this, so that we're not there and we latch on to the first rebirth that becomes available, because we want to get out of the bardo. So again, that's part of why we want to practice this. And then when we are actually reborn, say we're going to have the good fortune to be reborn as a human being, when the egg and sperm of the mother join, that's when the consciousness leaves the bardo and by its karma is attracted to the mother and father in the act when they're having sex, and enters into the united egg and sperm, and that's considered rebirth from the Buddhist point of view. Any questions or comments about that process? Do people get a sense of what I'm talking about? Okay. No questions. So we've got 8 dissolutions that we go through during the death process. The first 4 are primarily about the body dying. At the end of the fourth cycle is when, by Western standards, we would say you are dead. okay, breathing has ceased at that point and there's no measurable brainwave activity. But from the Buddhist point of view, the consciousness is still in that body, even though it's still united with that body, and the death process has not occurred, which is a complete separation of the consciousness from the body. Okay, so the first four elements, the first element to dissolve is the earth element, and this is the aggregate of four. Our limbs become quite weak, our body becomes weak and powerless, our ordinary consciousness dissolves, okay, stops functioning. That's a very gross level of consciousness. It's called our mirror-like wisdom, which is the consciousness that perceives the world around us. Okay, so we're losing the ability to use our eyesight. We don't see things around us. The eye consciousness ceases to function. And we have the appearance of what's called mirages to our mind's eye. And the best description I could find of this is it's whitish-gray swirling, just the appearance of white and gray swirling movement all around one. So that's what appears to your mind's eye. So the earth element has dissolved into the water element, which is the second stage. The bodily fluids now the water element begins to dissolve or cease to function, which means all our bodily fluids dry up. Our ability to distinguish pleasure, pain, and indifference, that our consciousness no longer functions as that function. We lose our ability to hear things, and the appearance to our mind's eyes of grayish black smoke. That's all that appears to our mind's eye as the ear sense dissolves and the bodily fluids dry up. And I tried to find out what UR sounds are, and I couldn't find a reference on that anywhere. So now the water element has dissolved into the fire element. Okay, we lose the ability to digest food or drink, take food or drink. Our mind loses the ability to discriminate, to distinguish between different things. Okay, we forget people's names, who they are, what their relationship is to us. We lose the ability to appreciate smells. And then the appearance to the mind is of sparks in that smoke that we saw in the previous stage. So this is what appears to our mind as we lose the ability to recognize people or appreciate smells. Okay, and next, the fire element dissolves into the wind element. Okay. We've completely lost the ability to perform, to have any kind of movement in our body. Our consciousness loses its ability to have purpose or intention. We no longer experience taste. Well, our body can't appreciate smooth or rough, distinguish between smooth or roughness, and the appearance to our mind's eye is of a lamp, a butter lamp or a oil lamp that's sputtering and about to go out. There's a flickering, about to extinguish itself light that appears to our mind's eye. Okay, so when we reach that state, there's no bodily movement, so there's no breathing. There's no heartbeat. Okay, nothing in the body is moving. This is by Western standards when we'd say you're dead. Okay, the Buddhist says the consciousness is still united with their body, so the time of death has not yet been reached. Okay, so then we have this is pretty much all the physical abilities have dissolved. So now we're talking about the winds, the energy channels, or the energy flows in the body that flow up and down from the top of our head down to our genitalia. And we're going to start noticing changes in them. the fifth cycle course consciousness, or in the fifth cycle, conceptuality disappears. Okay, any type of conceptual thought is no longer in the mind stream. Okay, and the energy, the winds that are in the right and left channels. We have one main channel and a right and a left channel. The winds in the right and the left channels enter this central channel at the top of our head. Okay? So the energy is leaving the right and left channels and is aggregating at the top of our head, at the top of the central channel. And the butter lamp goes out, and there's perfect emptiness or space filled with white light is what appears to our mind's eye as this happens. Okay. Let's see. The sixth cycle is the mind of white appearance. This is a... this is a very subtle mind that's completely free of conceptuality, as we mentioned, okay? And in the previous stage, the left and right channels above the heart, the energy in them goes to the head. In this next stage, below the heart, the energy in the left and right channels goes to the base of the spine in the central channels. So we've got energy here, and the appearance to our mind is of red light filling everything, space filled with red light. Then in the next stage, the mind of red increase. And this is getting tricky. Hold on just a second. And I can't really explain what that is, but the winds from the top of the head and the winds from the base of the spine both move to the level of the heart, okay, and gather at the heart. And then there's appearance of darkness that appears to our eyes, and we have a sensation that we're fainting. Okay? Then in the next stage, the mind of black near attainment, the energies at the heart gather into what's called the indestructible drop. And I'm not really going to talk about what that is, but it's like all the energies have come together in this minuscule little drop at our heart. Okay? And this is when the mind, the clear light mind, appears. This is complete clarity without any sort of contamination. Totally clear emptiness, free from, there's no white, black, or red appearances. And this, this is considered the moment of actual death, when the clear mind of clear light appears. And this is it's called a state of lucid vacuity. That's an interesting phrase. Okay, you're vacuous, but you're lucid. And you can stay in that state for up to 3 days. Okay? The consciousness is still there. And you can stay there for up to 3 days. Let's see. This is not the moment of death in Buddhism. This is state of lucid vacuity. You can stay there for up to 3 days if you've practiced this, if you're a great meditator. And then the at some point during that 3 days, actually can even be longer, but 3 days is the general length that it can happen to great meditators. Then you may see a little bit of blood come out the nose or a little bit of white fluid come from the genitalia, and that means that the consciousness has separated from that body, okay? So when the clear light vision ceases, the consciousness leaves the body, and the whole process occurs again in reverse order, okay? That rebirth is what enters the bardo and takes on a subtle body and starts looking for its next rebirth. Okay, this subtle rebirth into the bardo, and these 7-day cycles begin. And so it's called what happens in the bardo is the subtle body looks for a rebirth, and then there's what's called a small death if you haven't found your rebirth. You may hear that term. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask, when you mentioned that the subtle body will dissolve if it hasn't taken a rebirth in 7 days.
Mm-hmm. It dies again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then comes about? What is reborn or reappeared? What appears if the subtle body disappears? What?
It dies, goes through this process, comes mm-hmm. back in another subtle body.
Oh, it comes back
up to 7 times.
Okay. In another subtle body.
Until you find the actual rebirth into human realm, animal realm, hungry ghost realm, or whatever.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions about this? Yeah, let's see. Wait for the mic.
How does the subtle body escape from the bardo in samsara completely?
Well, the subtle body is just a temporary state. Mm. Okay, you leave the subtle body when your whatever karma is causing your rebirth arises. Okay, that's what takes you out of the bardo, is your karma into your next rebirth, which is samsara, the cycle of being born over and over again. Okay. The only way to get out of that is to become enlightened. Okay? The Buddha is not going through the process of samsara, of dying, entering the bardo, and being reborn. Okay? The Buddha has escaped from that because he's purified all his karma. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Okay?
So, if it's your karma that propels you from the bardo into your specific next rebirth,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then when you've reached a level of attainment where you can go through the process consciously mm-hmm. and affect your next rebirth, is it that you are affecting your karma while in the bardo, or is it that you have the karma to affect your rebirth?
That's a good question. I think I would say it's probably, and this, don't quote me on this, it's probably that you're creating the causes for more favorable karma to arise. Okay, because if you're entering the bardo, you know, you're not free of karma completely, but you can, you know, even while you're in the bardo, you can practice compassion and all these qualities and create the cause for very favorable karma to arise, is my understanding. Okay?
So I'm trying to understand where this comes from. The Dalai Lama and all great meditators have been through these levels of consciousness to understand this.
Well, it specifically comes from the historical Buddha. He taught this, and he's saying, this is what I observed happens during the death process from all my countless previous lifetimes. Now, I don't know if His Holiness the Dalai Lama will admit to remembering this or not. Okay, he practices it as a meditation to rehearse it, okay, just like we do, or that's what we're told, okay.
And it's a level of, the goal is to attain a level of consciousness that you're open to creating this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I got a question there in the back.
Does the karma ever subdivide? And by that I mean, if we go back in history, there were a lot less people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got 6+ billion.
Yeah.
Plus other creatures have multiplied. So
yeah.
If there's one karma coming out of somebody 1,000 years ago to keep up with all this, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, yeah. And the answer is no, because there are no... My consciousness is without beginning and without end, as is everyone else's consciousness, and my consciousness is not your consciousness. There's no cosmic soup of consciousness that we join into. So there are no... One of the corollaries of that is there are no new consciousnesses being created, because that would be a consciousness with a beginning. So the number of consciousnesses is not changing. But there are other realms, like there's the human realm and the animal realm, the two that we're familiar with. But there are other realms, the God realm, the demigod realm, the hungry ghost realms, and the hell realms, that consciousnesses can be born into and come out of. So they're moving in between all these realms, and there's some sort of virtue going on in that there are more human consciousnesses now at this point in history, but the total number of consciousnesses is not changing.
The number doesn't grow.
Right, and it doesn't diminish either. But there's a lot of them are in realms that we don't see. Okay, we've been there, but we don't remember it. Other realms of existence.
So back in a very early time, when there were few people, there were a lot of consciousnesses that were not, they were there, but they weren't attached to people.
They weren't in the human realm, yes.
So you're saying that they were in some other realm, or they were on some other creatures like, I don't know, dogs and bears and snakes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think the number of insects is increasing also dramatically, so a lot of consciousness are going into the animal realm. Yeah. Okay, Susie.
Now I forgot my question. Okay. Oh, are there other realms or other, I should say, places that humans can be? For instance, a different world.
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's in a category of teachings called the Abhidharma, which is Buddhist cosmology. And I've not studied that, whether there are human existences in other realms that we're, I don't know. Yeah.
Thank you.
Louise.
I read in the readings about the transference of consciousness. Where does that happen in all this?
The poa? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How does that work with all this?
That's a good question. Why don't you tell people what your understanding of poa is?
Well, my understanding is this much.
Yeah.
That apparently somewhere along the line, someone can, like a highly realized lama,
mm-hmm.
someone of that sort can transfer your consciousness to another realm for you, or on behalf of you, or
mm-hmm. yeah.
something like that.
That's a good question. I'm just going to have to pass on that. I'm really not qualified to talk about that, okay? Yeah, it jives with this somehow, but how, I don't exactly know. Yeah, Poe is a practice called transference of consciousness. I mean, if the consciousness separates from the body, it has to go through this process in some way. Yeah, but they don't talk about it. Or I haven't. Any other questions before we actually do the meditation? Okay, we're going to do a very abbreviated form of it tonight, and then next week we'll do it in more detail. Okay. So this is going to be a guided meditation. I'm going to talk you through it. And as opposed to the concentration meditation, this is what's called a visualization meditation, which is nothing fancier than our ability to imagine. Okay, so we're just going to imagine that we're going through the death process as I describe it. And like I said last week, the point is not to get scared or frightened, but just to become familiar with this process that we will inevitably go through. So just use your, we're just going to use our mind's ability to imagine, and the more real we make it, the more detailed and precise our imagination is, the more power the meditation is said to have. So we'll begin by checking our posture. And we'll take 3 deep breaths from the abdomen. And take a moment and set your motivation for doing the meditation. Just a couple minutes of concentration meditation to allow our mind to become more focused and alert. So again, just pay attention to the breath, mindfulness of the breath. That's all. And now we'll begin the meditation, the visualization. And I want you to imagine that you are in your bedroom, on your bed, lying there, and you are dying. The room is only slightly lit. It's a little bit dark. No one's there with you. It's a very quiet, peaceful death. You are lying on your bed. You're not experiencing any pain. Your mind is clear. And you know that the death process has begun. So again, just get that image. Really imagine that you're there, lying on your bed, on your back, a pillow underneath your head, in that room that's so familiar to you, and you're there by yourself. And the body and mind that we are so familiar with, that have been the basis of everything in this life, start to dissolve. The gross conceptual mind is beginning to fade away, and the physical body is losing all its functionality. So the first thing to dissolve is the earth element of our body. Our body is very weak. It's difficult to move our arms and our legs. We feel like we've lost weight and become thin. We can't open or close our eyes. And we can no longer see the familiar objects in the room around us. Colors and shapes are just, we can't perceive them anymore. All that appears to our mind is a swirling, whitish-gray appearance. And now the water element of the body begins to dissolve. Our mouth is dry, there's no saliva. Our eyes are dry. There's no urine flowing. It's, even the blood in our veins starts to thicken and dry. We can no longer hear any sounds. We've lost that ability to hear sounds. We have no perception of pleasure or pain or indifference. And what appears to our eyes now is whitish gray smoke, or appears to our mind's eye. There are no sounds. We can't see external objects. Just an appearance of smoke fills our mind. And now the fire element of our body begins to dissolve. We can no longer digest any form of food or drink. We can't remember who our family and friends are. Can't remember names or appearances. Our in-breath becomes very weak and shallow. We no longer perceive any smells. And what our mind sees is sparks in the whitish gray smoke. Infinite number of smokes. We've lost the ability to see, to hear, to smell. We can't distinguish pleasure or pain. We no longer remember others. And now the wind element dissolves. Breathing ceases completely. We cannot, there is no physical movement of any sort of the body. Respirations have completely ceased. The heart no longer beats. We've lost the ability to taste. and all consciousness of external phenomena has ceased. And what appears to our mind is a flickering candle that's just about to extinguish. To all outward appearances, we are dead. But our consciousness remains in the body. So we've lost all our sense activity, all awareness of external phenomena, all bodily functions, but our consciousness is still in our body. And in the next stage, the winds, the energy winds in the left and right channels, just to the side of the spine, above the level of the heart, move to the top of our head and enter the central channel there. So we feel those energy winds move to the top of our head. And what appears to our mind's eye is empty space filled with white light. And now the energy winds in the left and the right channel, below the level of the heart, move into the central channel at the base of the spine. And what appears to our mind's eye is empty space completely filled with red light. White light in the previous state, red light in this state. Now the energy at the top of our head and the energy wind at the base of our spine start to move towards our heart. And what appears to our mind's eye is empty space filled with blackness. And when the energy winds arrive at the heart, there's a sensation of fainting or swooning. And now all the winds gather into the indestructible drop at the center of the heart. And when this happens, all appearances of white, red, and black disappear. What appears to the mind's eye is perfect emptiness, perfect vacuity. And this is the mind of clear light that will continue on. So we just stay with that completely non-conceptual, non-judgmental, perfect, clear, light mind. And we just stay in the experience of that. And you can relax your concentration now. So that experience of the clear light, that's what the great meditators aim for, and they can stay in that state 3 days, sometimes even longer, but 3 days. And frequently they'll die in a meditation posture if they're having a peaceful death, and they'll stay in meditation posture after the breathing has ceased and there's no heartbeat, but the consciousness is still in the body in that clear light state. So like I said, when you see the fluid from the nose or from the genitalia, that's an indication that the consciousness has left. If they're in meditation posture, it's said they'll slump. And that's another sign that the consciousness has left. Or the body will start to stink. Time that the consciousness is left, or there's no warmth at the heart center, where the indestructible drop is. That's another sign that the consciousness has left the body. So you hear all these stories that are quite amazing. You know, I don't know what kind of documentation goes with them, but they're pretty common amongst these great meditators. Any questions or comments? Yes, Susie.
How does
fear come into this if I know that you're supposed to be calm and and when we're going through these stages, you don't feel this and you don't feel that. If someone were to be fearful, how would that
look? you wouldn't notice. You might just zoom past the clear light consciousness. Okay, you're not aware of what's happening. You might not even realize that you had experienced it. That would be one way. The next way, in the Bardo, you'd be inclined to grab the first rebirth your karma comes upon, rather than, you know, hoping good karma arises to get a favorable rebirth. You'll just grab onto the quickest rebirth available.
So it's like panic?
Yes, panic.
So you may be going through this process and not really understanding.
Your mind is agitated, panicky. Okay, you're going through it, and it's going to be fearful. Yeah.
I want to avoid that, of course.
Yes.
So I just wanted to know. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Anybody get freaked out by that or scared by it? That's okay. Yeah. Just become familiar with it. Maybe if you're doing the whole meditation, then you go through it in reverse order and you take rebirth. You know, everything that dissolves comes back. So you go through, everything dissolves and then you go back. That's doing the complete meditation. Next week, when we'll have more time, we're going to do this much longer version, so we get a real experience of it. I think I may even let people lie down if they want to, so they can get a sense that they're on their deathbed. And we may turn the lights off and have a few candles burning or something. I don't know. Make it real. No, I don't know. I'm not sure what we'll do. Yeah. Well, I took a Buddhist class ages ago, and we did a field trip to a cemetery for this meditation. We all had to lie down on the ground next to a grave while we did it. So it was interesting. Question, let's see. Okay, Kim.
I'm just thinking that, as you were going through it and we were losing, we're losing all the senses, that, it's quite enlightening because you really begin to get a sense of how dependent you are on the senses for your sense of identity.
Yes. Good point.
But so as those were being lost, and then you're really pretty much left only with what you are able to maintain in what you are calling your mind's eye. It seems to me that it would be very difficult not to have fear arise, simply because everything that you have known, except for maybe when you get in a meditation state here with Dr. Watkins, but everything that you have known is gone.
Your personality, yeah.
Yeah, I think it just seems like
your strong points and weak points, yes.
Really difficult not to become afraid because it's all gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's why I said we practice it.
It's so important,
Yeah. See, we had a couple up here.
Is there a tape or some recording available? The guiding was very good to stepwise bring me to a place. Is there anything like that available that I could listen to regularly?
There's a recording of Steve doing it on the Kadampa website. If you go in and Google and put Death Meditation Kadampa Center, it'll come up. You don't have to go through a membership. I just happened to find that the other day. And make sure you've got the right Kadampa Center, because there are other Kadampa Centers. Let's go say Stephanie Smith, okay, leading a death meditation when she taught this class a couple years ago. Yeah, so I just stumbled across it by accident. I was just Googling stuff and it took me to our website. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's kind of difficult to not get a little freaked out by the going down and you don't have control, but there's a Nepalese man that runs, I think it's Himalayan Frontiers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was explaining it. I went in there looking for some other things, but it's almost like, maybe people in Nepal and Tibet, they actually look forward to it like they're on a rocket ship. And
yeah.
They're about to experience something that, you know, we all do, but we don't have any mm-hmm. recollection of. And, I mean, to see the look on his face, it's they're really excited about that, to get to that moment where you might see that clear light
yeah.
consciousness.
They look at they think it's like going to a party.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to if you're a serious practitioner.
The mind of clear light.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is, do you need to attain enlightenment during life, or can you use that, the mind of clear light, and the fact that all of your attachments and everything have necessarily dissolved away, can you then attain enlightenment at that point or during the death process?
Yeah. I'm just hypothesizing. Don't take this as gospel, but I think you could. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it would be possible. But it doesn't have to be when you're healthy necessarily, but certainly if you can use that moment to the greatest possible effect, you could achieve enlightenment, I think. Yeah. Okay. I think that we'll call it quits for the night. Just get familiar with this. Remember, next week we start at 6:30 and we'll do some longer meditation. Isn't that what it's scheduled for? Or did I say 7 to 9? I can't remember. Okay, so we'll start at 7 and go till 9. Yeah, we'll have a chance to do longer meditations next week. And that's our last class. And we'll talk a little bit about what we can do to help the dying. That's always a question that people are interested in. What did the Buddha teach us about that?